Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come, Joel. Seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you're going to make it happen.
And Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, following all 82 Bulls games this season. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_Peck. You can follow Jordan, my co-host, at Jordan C. Malley, and you can follow us at Locked On Bulls. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Shoot us an email, LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. And of course, that text to voicemail line is always there for you, our fellow Bulls fans. 331-979-1369. Well, things finally starting to get back to normal. I was joking with my guys, John and Big Dave, after last night's loss to the Pacers about how things were comfortably familiar, kind of resetting an equilibrium. Resetting my equilibrium as a Bulls fan, frustratingly watching the Bulls cough up another fourth quarter lead. I don't know, something comforting about those things that are familiar. So I will give you some of my thoughts on this Bulls loss to the Pacers. Before I get into that, however, I just wanted to give a heartfelt thank you to everybody who reached out to me about the episode I did earlier this week talking about Kobe Bryant and the struggles I was having sort of going through my grieving process with his loss and how it brought up some really painful personal experiences that I've dealt with over the years since losing my cousin. Truly means so much to me, those of you who reached out, and especially those of you who shared some of your own stories of loss and grief. So a quick shout out to Steven and Casey and Stuart and Jimmy and David. I appreciate you guys so much. I'm glad that my words resonated with you guys and helped you in some way in your own grief and in your own reflection of not only trying to process the loss of an NBA icon like Kobe, but also some of the hardships with loss that you've gone through in your own lives. Clearly, as you could tell, it was not easy for me to talk about, but I felt like I wanted to. It's something that I wanted to share with all of you out there in Bulls Nation who listen to this podcast, who I very much appreciate. So thank you. You have no idea how much it means to me, those of you who reached out and said that you were moved by my words and that they resonated with you, and sending all of you my strength and my love and appreciation. So, now that we've got that sappy shit out of the way, let's talk Bulls basketball. Man, just when you thought that the Bulls might actually show you a competent, complete 48-minute game of basketball where they go on the road and beat a quality opponent. And the Pacers had all the momentum in this game. They got back their star, Victor Oladipo, who'd been rehabbing for the first half of the season, waiting to make his comeback. And it just so happens that the Bulls are in Indiana for Oladipo's first night this season. He comes off the bench, gets a huge ovation from the Pacers crowd at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and had a little bit of a slow start to the game. Of course, hit the big dagger three to send the game into OT, and really came on strong late in that game. But clearly, because of Oladipo's presence, that, you know, the energy, I thought it was going to be really tough for the Bulls to compete in that game and come out with a win, maybe. which would have been the Bulls' first three-game winning streak of the season, believe it or not. They still have yet to attain that elusive achievement. But as we were watching that game last night, we were all very pleasantly surprised by how competent the Bulls looked on both ends of the floor. The ball was moving on offense. They were getting a lot of looks in the paint. Obviously, the absence of Miles Turner helped some with that. But the Bulls were executing, and they were playing decent defense. And it was happening on a night when Zach LaVine was off. He has, you know, had some of those nights this season where especially the three-point shot is not falling. I believe he finished 1 of 11 from behind the three-point line last night, 7 of 23 overall. But his shot wasn't working, and he got others involved. Zach had 9 assists last night. Satoransky had 4. Chris Dunn had 3. The ball was moving. Even the second unit, Hutch had 2 assists. Archie had 3. Valentine had 2. The Bulls were moving the ball. And on a night when it wasn't just Zach LaVine, but the team as a whole was just chucking up bricks from behind the three-point line, the Bulls finished 6 of 33 for 18.2% behind the arc. That's not great. But the damage they were able to do in the paint, they still shot 53% overall from the field. And they climbed back from a reasonable deficit and were in control late in this game. And credit to them. Credit to them for playing a really quality game of basketball for about 44 minutes. And how many times have we seen that this season? How many times have we had to talk about a Bulls team that coughs up a lead that they shouldn't cough up late in the game? And I know a lot of Bulls fans were upset about the no call when Zach LaVine drove on that final possession and got hacked. And you can be upset about that if you want to, because it is correct to say that that was a blown no-call. He clearly got hacked as he was gathering and going up in a shooting motion, and it wasn't called. And that sucks. But as Zach LaVine himself said after the game, it shouldn't have come to that. Yeah, it sucks that I didn't get that call. And Zach has been dealing with a lack of respect from NBA officials all season long. And it's very frustrating, not only for him, but for Bulls fans watching at home. To see this guy who's been playing at an all-star caliber level, or certainly something very close to it, all season long, does not get the calls that he should. And it sucks, especially when it happens in a late crunch time moment like that. Because you could say Zach LaVine should have been at the free throw line, putting the Bulls up by 2, to win the game. But that doesn't happen. The Bulls go to overtime, and of course they lose in overtime because the Pacers at that point had all the momentum. And why? Because as Zach LaVine, you know, pointed to, the Bulls were falling apart in the final 4-plus minutes of that game. From the 4-11 mark through zeros on the clock at the end of regulation, the Bulls scored 0 points and coughed up a 7-point lead. 2 turnovers, 0 for 5 from the field, bad possession after bad possession. I mean, you could see it coming. The writing was on the wall because guess what? We've watched that happen umpteen times already this season. The Bulls are in a close game. They're in a position to win a game, and the execution falls flat. And depending on where you stand with what's wrong with this team, you know, I was talking earlier today on Twitter with one of the Zach LaVine doubters. Maybe it's a little harsh to call him a Zach LaVine hater, but, oh, Zach, you know, didn't get it done again late in a close game. Dude sucks in crunch time. And then there are those more like myself who say, look at what Zach is being asked to play with. And look at the positions that his coach are putting his team in. Not in the best position to win. Not giving them the best chances to win, but the exact opposite. Based on his mismanagement of timeouts, his mismanagement of the rotation and who he has out there on the floor late in games. I just, it's all incredibly frustrating. Because we've seen it, we've seen the same movie play out over and over and over. So as the Bulls had a bad possession, followed by a bad possession, and I'm talking about like Felicio still being out on the floor in the final minutes of a fourth quarter. And it, like, I guess you could say Felicio has had a couple of decent games recently. And, you know, that is being very generous on the low bar, the bar that is set below the ground level of what constitutes a quote-unquote decent game for Felicio, who's being asked to play these minutes because the front court has been decimated, Wendell, Gafford, Lowry. But you don't need to play Felicio 30 minutes in a game. Especially on a night when Turner is not playing for the Pacers and you can get away with more small ball lineups. Hutch had the game of his short NBA career last night and he's not out on the floor there late in the game? You got to play Felicio? You got to have, you know, four or five straight possessions where you run a Felicio high screen and roll? Who, guess what? The Pacers are not dumb. I think we'll double team Zach LaVine because that dude knows how to score. And it led to bad shots where LaVine is double teamed and forcing up tough looks from behind the 3-point line where he already has been struggling tonight. It's so stupid. Because guess what? As I said earlier in this game, the Bulls were moving the ball well. They were getting all these looks in the paint. But opponents adjust, Jim Boylan does not, and Bulls lose. It's the same freaking story. More on that in a minute, but first, a word from our friends at MyBookie. Are you the type of sports fan that knows your sport so well you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between the Super Bowl on deck this weekend, the NBA, and now college basketball in full swing, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of sports fan who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. Tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain? MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back on the game. And if you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate this offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, so back to the Bulls coughing up another fourth quarter lead. I mentioned that the Bulls didn't score in the final 4 minutes and 11 seconds of regulation, and I believe it was a 22-6 run that the Pacers finished on to come back and win this game. Yes, that's correct, 22-6. So the Bulls, prior to coughing up this lead, were on a 10-3 run of their own to take that lead, 193, with a Satoransky mid-range pull-up at 4:11 left. No one scores for either team until 2:32, where Brogdon makes a driving layup to trim the Bulls' lead to 5. Lots of things happened. Some bad possessions for both teams in and out of there, including, hey, LaVine missing a 27-foot pull-up behind the arc after a Felicio pick and roll that surprisingly went nowhere. But even before that, Zach missed another difficult pull-up shot on, guess what? Another Felicio pick and roll that went nowhere. After Jim Boylan calls a timeout, 3:39, Brogdon has a bad pass that Zach LaVine picks off. He is still on the Pacers' half of the court, as are several I believe at least three of his Bulls teammates on that side of the court. And the Bulls have an opportunity to keep this momentum, get themselves an easy bucket in transition, and push their lead to 9 with 3.5 minutes remaining. But no. What do we watch? We watch Jim Boylan jumping up and down frantically on the sideline, motioning for a timeout to be called. Why? Basketball is a game of runs. It is a game of momentum. We talk about that being a big factor in the game all the time. The Bulls had the momentum. The Bulls had a 7-point lead, had the Pacers on their heels a little bit. And credit to where it's due, Bulls got themselves one of these turnovers that they love to create so very much that has them a top 10 defensively ranked team in the league. Cool. You're 19-31, but cool. And what does the coach do? He calls a timeout. A completely unnecessary timeout. Out of that timeout, Boylan makes no adjustment to the five guys out there on the floor, including, hilariously, sending Cristiano Felicio, who's a $32 million punchline, back out there for the final minutes of a fourth quarter. And what a genius play did Jim Boylan draw up out of a timeout so the Bulls get themselves a good look at a bucket to push that lead from 7-9? No! You got to watch Felicio set a high screen! After the game, Boylan, of course, was asked about that questionable timeout. And he said his guys looked tired and he wanted to give them a break. And that, you know, they looked a little unorganized. So, you know, he wanted to take that timeout. Also, he said if he didn't use that timeout there, he would have lost it, as that is an NBA rule. You can't take more than 2 timeouts into the final 3 minutes of the fourth quarter. So, technically, he is correct about that. If that timeout was not taken by Jim at that point, he would have just lost it, but still had 2 remaining. So just because he would have lost that timeout because of NBA rules of how many timeouts you can take into the final minutes of the game does not mean he needed to take it. How many different ways can Boylan convince this fan base? How many different ways can he demonstrate to everyone watching that the man does not know how to manage his timeouts? He takes them when he shouldn't. He doesn't have them when he needs them. It's absurd. Absolutely absurd. The Bulls had a chance to get a nice quick transition bucket. LaVine picks off a pass on the Pacers' half of the court. Boylan frantically calls timeout when he doesn't need to. That crushes his own team's momentum. The Bulls have a bad possession out of that timeout. Boylan makes no adjustments during that timeout. And hey, go figure. The Pacers mount their comeback. It was all so obvious. You could call it as it happened. One of those turnovers, as the Bulls failed to score in the last 4 minutes and 11 seconds, was Felicio being called for a traveling violation that was so goddamn hilarious. I mean, Big Dave and John were cackling as we were watching this, knowing the Bulls were about to cough up another fourth quarter lead. Like, it's like he was just going for a Sunday afternoon stroll through the park holding a basketball. Why? Why is he on the floor? Why? Doesn't make any sense. It really, truly doesn't. It's just so aggravating to watch the same thing happen over and over and over. And it's why I don't give a shit that coming into that game on Wednesday night, the Bulls were just 2 games back of the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference. After losing that game to the Pacers that the Bulls should have won, and the Brooklyn Nets winning their game Wednesday night, the Bulls are now back to being 3 games back of the 8th seed. But My guy Darnell Mayberry, who does amazing work covering the Bulls for The Athletic, had a great column earlier today that I suggest you read about this whole notion of the Bulls still fighting for being a playoff team is folly. It is completely ludicrous to talk about the Bulls being a playoff caliber team. Yeah, the Eastern Conference is bad. Lots of bad teams out there. And because of all the bad teams in the East, the Bulls still, as of today, are not completely out of the hunt at just three games back and 32 to play. But does that really matter? I was listening to some of the new voicemails we have in our inbox, and Jordan and I will try to get to those as soon as we can. One of them, shout out this dude Mike Wilson, who was ragging on me for being, you know, overly negative when covering this team this season, and pointing out, hey, like, the Bulls are at 19 wins and counting as we get to the All-Star break. They only won 22 games all of last season. They are improving. I don't know what you're looking at, man. The Bulls have a pile of, you know, bad teams in toilet bowl, bad wins in toilet bowl games. They have one win against a plus 500 team this season. One win and 19 losses. They still haven't beaten a winning team in their own conference, their own division. Which is why last night was all the more frustrating. Would have been impressive in a lot of ways. First three-game winning streak of the season at game number 50. A quality road win against a quality division opponent that's playoff bound. All these things would have been nice if the Bulls had completed a 48-game minute of basketball. A 48-minute game of basketball. But no. Same story, different day. So, I don't want to hear about the Bulls being a potential playoff-bound team. I don't want to hear things about, well, it'll be great experience for these young guys to go play in a playoff series, even if they're the eighth seed that gets trounced by them. Really? What's useful about watching the Bulls lose to the Bucks four more times? I'm not trying to be like a snarky asshole. I'm honestly asking those of you out there who think that would be useful. Why? Other than, responding to me with the general two-word phrase of, oh, playoff experience. This team has such bigger problems than, oh, man, they've been in a lot of close games that they just can't quite win. That, you know, young team learning how to finish. We all know what the bigger problems are. Jim Boylan's a bigger problem. John Paxson's a bigger problem. The Reinsdorfs are a bigger problem. And if they squeak in as an eighth seed, and the Reinsdorfs get to fill those seats at the United Center for two playoff home games as the Bulls get blown out by 20 or 30 points in a four-game sweep exit, maybe some changes that really need to happen don't happen. Jim Boylan should have been fired months ago. He hasn't, for understandable reasons. We don't have to like the reasons, but we understand what those reasons are. So, no. Like Darnell, I don't want anyone talking to me about, well, hey, we're still only three games back. Have you looked at the Bulls' schedule in March and April, by the way? It's a gauntlet. They're not winning more of those games than they're losing. Not with this team. Not with all the injuries that have racked up. And that's the other thing to me when people say, well, hey, look, they are improving. You know, only 22 wins all of last season. They've already got 19 as we near the All-Star break. Do you remember the rosters, the rotations that we were trotting out there for the back half of last season? Remember how we were missing Markkanen for the first 30 or so games at the beginning of last season? Yeah, losing Otto early hurt. We all knew that if Otto went down, this team would have a hole that they would have a tough time filling. And recently, losing Wendell, losing Lowry, losing Gafford, these all hurt. Hopefully, we will get some of those pieces back. But before they went down, this team was not improving upon last season. They were regressing. Individuals and as a team, they were regressing. So that's why I don't want to hear about these, well, hey, maybe eighth seed, or hey, look how many more wins we have now compared to last year. execution continues to fail them. Inflated defensive rating continues to prop up a team that has such bigger problems, including the defense that they insist on running, including the systems that Jim Boylan insists on running, regardless of the personnel he has to work with. But as I said, especially through the very difficult start to this week, as we all try to process and mourn and grieve the loss of Kobe Bryant, there was something oddly comforting and familiar about the Bulls coughing up a fourth quarter lead. I wish it weren't the case. But we watched a movie for the 18th time. We saw how it could end before it ended. We knew how it would end before it ended. Same shit, different day. Before we get out of here, I just wanted to quickly mention the new All-Star Game format. This got posted by a bunch of different NBA reporters earlier today. There is a new format for the actual NBA All-Star Game itself, as far as competitively through each quarter and how the winner of the game will be decided. So there is an aspect to this that I like. That being, both of the All-Star teams will play for Chicago-based community organizations, and those will be selected by the captains, Giannis and LeBron. Each of the first three quarters will be individually competed, with the start of the quarter for all of those three quarters at being at the score starting at 0-0 and 12-minute long quarters. So, each of the teams that win those first quarters, the first three quarters, will receive $100,000. So, each of those quarters adding up to $300,000 total to the charity for each of those teams and their captains, as I said, chosen by LeBron and Giannis. So, each winner of the first three quarters gets to donate $100,000 to the charity that LeBron and Giannis choose. That's a Chicago-based organization. That's very cool. I like that element to this. Here's where things get weird. At the start of the fourth quarter, the game clock will be turned off and a final target score will be set. The final target score will be determined by taking the leading team's total cumulative score through three quarters and adding 24 points. The 24 representing the late Kobe Bryant's uniform number. Once the final target score is set, the teams will play an untimed fourth quarter, and the first team to reach the final target score will win the NBA All-Star Game. For example, if the cumulative score of the first three quarters is 100-95, the final target score would be set at 124. To win the All-Star Game, the team with 100 points would need to score 24 in the fourth quarter, before the team with 95 points scores 29, and vice versa. The winning team in the All-Star Game, aka the team that reaches the final target score first, will earn an additional $200,000 for its designated community organization. Okay, couple of thoughts. Did you need to make it this complicated? Did you need to make it this complicated to try to spice up the game, to liven up the competition, to say, hey, there's an incentive for winning each of the four quarters? Or in a different term, there's incentive for winning the first three quarters individually and then also incentive for winning the game as a whole. And this final target score thing, I like that you're trying to honor Kobe, because clearly, you know, there will be lots of feelings and lots of, you know, various moments of dedication to Kobe at All-Star Weekend. The first NBA All-Star Weekend without Kobe since his passing will feel like this tremendous hole in the NBA community. And I like that they're trying to do something to honor Kobe. But does it need to be this? A weird fourth quarter, new rule, a final target score? As my buddy Jason Goff, who does Bulls pre and post with our amazing team at NBC Sports Chicago, said on Twitter, you know what would be good? You know what would honor Kobe? Both teams just competing hard, trying to win the game as if it were, say, like an NBA playoff game that mattered. None of this like, oh, you know, team Giannis 202, team LeBron 196. Like, we know in not quite as drastic ways as, say, the NFL's Pro Bowl, you know, which I'm sure nobody watched last weekend. But we're starting to get that kind of thing in the NBA All-Star Game, too, where it's like neither team plays defense. Everybody's just dicking around, and it's lobs, and it's chucking up a bunch of threes. And in some face value way, yeah, it's entertaining. But it's not competitive. And it's like, and I think it was Casey Johnson who replied to Jason Goff's tweet about this, saying like, yeah, remember that time in that All-Star game when Dwayne Wade accidentally broke Kobe's nose? And then, you know, Dwayne Wade, like, apologized to Kobe later. You know, like, breaking your nose in an All-Star game? Like, come on, man. Take it down a notch. And Kobe's response was, nah, dude, I love it. I love it. Because Kobe was that competitive. Dwayne Wade, that competitive. All-Star games in the NBA used to be that competitive. And they're just not now. It's about egos, and it's about alley-oops, and it's, you know. And look, I get it. Credit to the players for wanting to just go out there and have a good time. They deserve that. For as grueling of a regular season 82-game schedule as they go through with all of the travel, if you are one of the players honored to be participating in the All-Star game itself, you should have the right to have fun. But these are competitors all. Especially ones who are good enough to make the All-Star team. And I know it means more to some than others. Vets who have done it and are doing it for the 12th or 13th or 14th time, it means less to them now than it does to, say, a young player getting in for the first time. Or just the second time. And again, NBA players who earn that honor have the right to play the All-Star game they want to play it. And if they want to just dick around, dick around. But if the league really wants the game to mean something and for fans to be drawn to it, if the players want fans to be drawn to it, don't come up with all these new gimmicky rules. Honor Kobe by competing. Honor Kobe by playing some defense. Honor Kobe by treating the game like it matters. So, yeah, I like the fact that we're going to put some money to some Chicago organizations that can use it. And I like the fact that they're making that monetary incentive for each of the first three quarters in addition to who wins the total game. That's a good thing. Honoring Kobe? That's a good thing. Honoring Kobe by making this random 24-point final target score thing? No, that doesn't honor Kobe just because it's coincidentally the same number of points as the one of the two numbers of a jersey he wore. That's not honoring Kobe's spirit. That's just saying, hey, look, 24 points. Kobe wore number 24. Let's have 24 points be somehow relevant in the fourth quarter of the All-Star game. You're overcomplicating things. And that's not to say that players can't do both. They make this rule change. That's not to say that that's going to prevent players from honoring Kobe by competing and playing hard. And I hope that that happens. I hope that whoever, starters plus reserves, who will be named later tonight, still keeping our fingers crossed for Zach LaVine, whoever those all-stars are, you hope that they take it upon themselves to say, that's how I'm going to honor Kobe. Much like many players have said, as tough as it's been to play these games over the last few days, as we all mourn, that going out there and playing basketball and competing is what Kobe would want. So it's weird. They always try and, you know, come up with these new gimmicks, these new rules to spice up an event that's kind of lost its luster. And especially this year, especially in this exact moment, as we all try and deal with this loss, I feel like the answer is just simple and staring us in the face. Don't try and come up with these cutesy new rules. Just go out there and play hard. For Kobe. That's it for today. Appreciate everybody listening. Bulls have more games on deck before we reach that All-Star break. We've got the Brooklyn Nets in Brooklyn on Friday night. That, for some, could be seen as a big game. Could have been an even bigger game if the Bulls had managed to beat the Pacers on Wednesday to keep pace with the Nets, who are currently occupying that 8th seed. But y'all know where I stand on that. I guess, technically, the Bulls, if they managed to beat the Nets in Brooklyn, could get themselves a full game closer by handing the Nets a loss and giving themselves a win. And then, of course, you know, who doesn't want Bulls 2 p.m. matinee tip-off on Super Bowl Sunday? Because that's what we get as the Bulls go up to Toronto to play the Raptors. 2 p.m., Super Bowl Sunday. Really? I loved how Stacey King, during Wednesday's broadcast, said, man, no NBA game should be played on Super Bowl Sunday. And I agree. I am very upset about it. Such is life. In the meantime, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Bulls_Peck, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Locked On Bulls, and hit us up on that text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Until tomorrow, Bulls Nation, enjoy a night off of Bulls basketball. Keep your fingers crossed for Zach LaVine as we learn the All-Star Reserve selections later tonight. And we will talk to you tomorrow. Peace out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com